Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you are listening to Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we are funded by the Great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. To learn more about the PNWA as well as their fabulous yearly writers conference, please go to pnwa.org. You know, it would be my guest today, Holly Robinson, has a somewhat unique distinction. Her first book, a memoir, The Gerbil Farmer's Daughter, was published by a division of Random House. But her second book, the novel Sleeping Tigers, was published by CreateSpace. It was an independently published book. But her third book, her first traditionally published novel, The Wishing Hill, just came out in July. So this is pretty unusual, today's market, to have to bounce in and out of the world of traditional indie publishing. And that alone, I suppose, would be enough to talk to Holly. But I have to tell you that what really intrigues me about Holly is her biography, which to me speaks of someone with great determination and stick-to-itiveness and patience. And despite marriages and the ins and outs of children and career, an unwillingness to let go of a dream to become a professional writer, which is exactly what she is right now. And it's that, if you ask me, which is more important to share with folks than the ins and outs of indie and professional publishing, which is why I asked her to be on the show and why I am saying, Holly, welcome to Author. How are you doing?
I'm just fine. Thank you, Bill. I'm so happy to be here. And I'll tell you what, I sure wish I'd had your book, Write Within Yourself, when I was starting out to be a writer. It might not have taken me quite so many tries to publish novels if I'd had that by my side. I had to laugh when I was hearing your introduction about how determined and focused I must be to be a working writer. The truth is, my dad was always saying, "You lack focus," because I flitted from thing to thing to thing always. And I think that's because, you know, I majored in biology in college. At one point, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer or a doctor. And I didn't write because I didn't know any writers. I didn't know you could make a living as a writer. I just was always a reader. And I think it's, you know, when you say in your book, one reason people find writing hard, it's because maybe because you're writing the wrong thing, and I think I was just pursuing the wrong careers, and so I lacked focus until I discovered writing, and then that's all I wanted to do. So, you know, I feel very lucky to have been able to make a living at it.
Well, I'll tell you, Holly, it's an unusual business. I was just talking to someone about the career of writer, and she was very worried her daughter might decide to do that, and I said, you can make a living as a writer. I know hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who are doing it, and there are thousands more that I haven't met, but it is unusual in that it requires – there isn't a business with doors and a sign over the top that you can walk into and just apply for the job of writer. It requires such independence and such a willingness to believe in yourself that maybe isn't quite required for other professions, including being a lawyer and a doctor, which are very difficult in and of themselves.
I think you're right. I think because there aren't exactly the prescribed steps. You know, when you become a lawyer, you go get a law degree. When you become a doctor, you get a medical degree, and there you go. Suddenly you're a lawyer or a doctor. Well, not suddenly, but years.
Right.
But, you know, with writing, you have to experience things first and be writing them down and be willing to just get punched down and get up, which does happen a lot as a writer. You get rejected a lot.
Sure.
And so I think probably what it takes more than anything is a thick skin and a belief in yourself, which is sometimes hard to come by when you are getting those rejections. But it is absolutely true you can make a living as a writer. I make a good living. I say that. I drive a used Honda. I live in a, you know, modest house. But I have put my, you know, I've helps put our kids through college. I pay the mortgage. And we're, you know, I'm a working writer, and I work as a ghostwriter for celebrity memoirs, and I do, you know, novels, which don't pay much of the mortgage, but pay some of the mortgage. And
right.
I also write articles for women's magazines and marketing materials. I'll do essays for, you know, magazines and newspapers. And so to be a writer just really means being prepared to be nimble and to take advantage of opportunities as they come your way, and to also be, you know, willing to talk to people, which I think is, you know, hard for writers because we tend to be, you know, we like to spend a lot of hours alone. That's partly why we become writers, is we're thinking a lot and we're writing a lot, but you have to be willing to put yourself out there as a person if you're going to make a living as a writer.
Now, that's interesting because I just came from the Northwest Writers Association Summer Conference.
Uh-huh.
It's a giant conference of like 500 writers show up, and
yeah, it's a great conference. Oh,
you've been to it? Okay.
No, but well, I have a lot of friends who've been to it. I have West Coast writer friends who've been to it.
Yes, and if you're on the coast, it's worth at least checking out. But I always have noticed. So I'm not an introvert. I just am not. As people can tell from this show.
Yes.
But I love, you know, I like mixing it up. But I realized that for years I've been going to these conferences and wondering what the vibe is. There's a very particular uncomfortable vibe at a lot of writers' conferences, and it's just that you've got a pack of introverts, which is 90%
right.
of writers being totally forced out of their comfort zone. And
right. I went to the AWP in Boston, and it was similar to that. You know, a lot of aspiring writers, and a lot of them are really nervous to be in crowds.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell, and they're all sitting around in corners with their laptops instead of talking, because that's who
right.
they are, you know, so it makes it more difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you said something interesting and very flattering. Thank you very much about Write Within Yourself, my book that's out there now, and you said you wish you'd had it when you were starting out. But the reason I wrote it, Holly, is because it's the book I wish I could have read when I was starting out. You know, and I honestly, because I look around and I'd say, geez, this is so depressing what I'm reading about the publishing world. And I wanted to create something that I felt could counter some of the narrative that's out there about the world of writing and publishing and so on.
I think that's great, and that's a good point. It's such a positive book, and I think It's a very zen, sort of philosophical read, but it's also very practical in the sense that, you know, you're telling us if what you're writing isn't the right thing, try writing something else. And you can't be impatient, because guess what? You can't force the river, and you might need to write 10 drafts of that story or that book, which, you know, I can tell you from personal experience, yeah, you often do need to write more than a few drafts. And really the best piece of advice you have in there is that the world doesn't want you to fail, and to take those rejection letters or bad reviews as you know, like if there's something in there you can use it, you know, by all means, and then just keep going. Because I think that's all true. And I do find there's a lot of like gloom and doom about publishing, and I think it's actually a very exciting time to be a writer, because I loved the experience of being an indie novelist. Everyone was very supportive. I found it a really fun process. It was a great education in digital marketing, because you do, again, you have to put yourself out there to sell your books. But I found the process itself pretty exhilarating and liberating, and I would certainly do it again. Having said that, then I found a place for my writing with New American Library Penguin, where I've had a great experience putting out The Wishing Hill, because I found a team that I really love to work with. You know, I have an editor and copy editor and publicist and marketer, and, you know, these people who are really skilled at what they do, and that's been such a learning experience for me. So both ways have been great. So I think, wow, you know, we really have more options than ever before to get our writing into the hands of readers, and that's really what it's all about.
I agree, and I was going to self-publish Write Within Yourself through CreateSpace, because I had a platform, you know, which is the all-important thing.
Sure.
And then I started doing it, and I was having fun sort of assembling it, and then I said to myself, I want a team around me.
Mm-hmm,
I want a team.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went and found a publisher, because I thought, I actually don't want to go through this by myself completely. I would like people to help me. And so I found a publisher who could do just that. But that was my decision. And I think one of the biggest things when people, you know, I go to conferences and people say, oh, should I do indie or shouldn't I not do indie? And the thing I always say to them, and maybe you could speak to this, is if you do indie, understand you're now a business person. You're not just a writer anymore. And if that intrigues you, go for it. But if you just want to write, then I would continue to seek traditional publishing.
Well, I would go one step further and say actually you have to also still do marketing when you're traditionally published
because
you know your publicist will do so much for you, but then it really is up to you to continue networking and putting yourself out there, putting your book out there and social media. No matter any way you look at it, it's essential now for any writer to be involved in social media because that is where the bulk of marketing happens. Even for traditionally published books, yes, you have that marketing machinery behind you that Penguin Random House can give you if you're with a big publisher, but you still need to be in it. You know, you need to be part of that team. But I do think that it's also essential for people to think about what kind of book they're writing. Certain books do really well, indie, and other books do less well. And for if you're writing romances, if you're writing mysteries, you can probably do pretty well as an indie author if you're willing and if you have the financial backing to sort of to pay for the publicity, to pay for the editing you need. You still need that team, but the difference is you assemble the team yourself and you have to pay for it. And you have to figure, okay, how much can you put out there financially yourself? How much will you get back? You know, and that it is a consideration. My next book is also going to come out with Penguin just because I've been really happy with the whole process with them. And I adore my editor, and I'm learning so much from her as a writer that I don't want to leave her, you know, so it's been great.
Yeah, speaking of editors, I thought I loved what you said that your writing career began in magazines, doing journalism and essays, and you had great experiences working with the magazine editors,
and I did,
they taught you a lot, didn't they, about the writing? Even though you had come to that writing that part of your career with an MFA, you had gone through the MFA program. But still, working with those professional. The Ladies Home Journals and those sorts of magazines. That was very informative for you, wasn't it?
I've mentioned a lot of them even in my acknowledgments of my first novel because my editor at Ladies Home Journal, my editor at Parents, Family Circle, Better Homes and Gardens, all those magazines, first of all, they're really smart, most of them, or they wouldn't be in those jobs, so that helps. But secondly, they all had things to teach me, not just about little picky grammar things, but about structure, like when I'm writing an essay, about voice, when I'm, you know, capturing other people's voices on the page, if I'm writing an article, or if I'm writing an essay too, about shaping a piece, which, you know, obviously it's different from essay to article to not writing fiction. But some skills transfer, like your ability to connect with your audience, to know how much description is too much description for a certain size piece, and how to use dialogue effectively, you know, and all of those pieces. Even if you're writing an article, a how-to article about, you know, how to potty train your child, you're interviewing other moms about their techniques, you're still using dialogue effectively, you hope. And so, I really, really learned a lot from those magazine editors. I still do. I mean, still write for them, and I still love it.
Yeah. Well, you know, everything is narrative in the end. I mean, even these essays, you know, I write Within Yourself has actual stories, and then it has things that are more like essays. But really, everything in the end is narrative, because even if you're trying to make a point, you're going to do it with some sort of a sense of a narrative arc the essay will deal with a problem that you're going to try and help them solve and so on. Even though novel is unique in that you're starting from nothing and trying to build up from it, it still is narrative that you're doing even in the essay of a flow of thought, of moving from one introduction of an idea, moving through to a conclusion. It's still narrative in its own way.
That's right, and it still has a shape, and it still has to have that that tension, that pull in it to move you forward.
That's right.
And I, one thing I've found really consistent between writing essays and novels, for example, is that when I start an essay or when I start a novel, inevitably the real beginning of the piece is much deeper into it, and I end up lopping off that whole beginning. You know, the whole first page of the essay or the whole first chapter of a novel. Oh, no, the story really started way down here, you know. So that's really instructive for me.
Why is that? Why is that so often the case that we have to start so much sooner than the thing actually begins?
Yeah, well, I think it's warm up for our minds. I think it's calisthenics, you know, like I think you have to really get into the piece, and you're describing all these things, and you're giving your character all these flashbacks and motivations and history, and you have to do that for yourself as a writer. But really, it's better to leak that information out slowly, if at all, and kind of intersperse it in the rest of the book. But we tend to front load the information because we're thinking about it. We're working it out for ourselves in our own minds when we do it. And I think that's why it happens. But you just have to be aware, you know. And it's, and you know what I always say to writing students is, you know, that your first draft, you just be a child, just play with abandon. Don't care about what your clothes look like or how muddy you get, or, you know, eat as much candy as you want, all that. Like, just like go and just let it go. And then, you know, the second draft, you're a teenager, you're kind of shaping it up. And the third draft, that's where you're the adult. You're really, you know, really acting properly there as a book, the narrative structure and the final shape and polish that you want it to look its best on its wedding day, you know, when it comes out to the public. Right. And that's a, you know, that's a great way to just let the process flow that way.
I like that analogy, the play analogy for the first draft, because what you're trying to do is find out what about this story idea is actually interesting to me. What is turning me on about this thing so that I can bring the most heat to the page possible? Because if you come in right away with all this strict rules about how it has to be structured, you might not allow yourself to discover what is truly exciting to you through a messy exploration.
Right. You won't get anywhere because you'll be busy self-censoring, and that happens a lot. Yeah. And I have a lot of people coming to me who are like, oh, I've been working on this book for, like, you know, 5 years, and I'm not getting anywhere. But I'm like, well, it's probably the wrong book. You know, don't write it. And that doesn't mean that it was a waste of time. Like, I have novels in my drawers. Like, for this next, the book that's coming out, Beach Plum Island, that's coming out next April, there's a character in there who was in another one of my novels. And I think of it almost like as a Rubik's Cube, you know, like, oh, these colors didn't go together, but she belongs in this other novel. And I can build this so that the plot was all wrong about that other novel I wrote, but I can make a new plot and still put her on this island and still make her a potter and still, you know, but then that's it. But then the rest of the thing is all new, but I have this, you know, substance there that was good that I created in the other book. So it's not a waste of time. You're learning something from every book you write, even if you trash it. It's not ever a waste of time.
No, it's not. And I loved what you'd said, that the thing that you took away from Write Within Yourself is that life doesn't want you to fail, and it is absolutely true. Life wants you to have so much success it will floor you if you could stand it, and that those rejections, I've had to accept this about my own life, where there was lots of rejection, lots of novels I wrote that didn't publish, that all those no's were necessary. I needed those because I was writing books that really weren't the right books for me, and so life in itself was saying, no, go write, and finally I was guided back to stuff that I really wanted to do. So I needed those no's. I didn't, at the time, I hated them. I loathed them, but they were necessary. They were necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also like what you said in your Discovering Windows chapter, that writing, like some marriages, can be a constant discovery. And as with writing, love is not some destination but a portal, a window through which to see life, and as you might want to lead it. And I think that's really true, too, is it just this whole process is, you know, it just keeps being so exciting. You know, so people say, oh, are you still writing? It's like, yeah, of course I'm still writing because I'm still discovering. You know, it's so cool to be writing. I learn so much every day that I write, no matter what I'm writing. I'm still learning a lot. Yeah.
That's right. And it's learning. That's the beauty of it. Like, when I write those little essays, even though I come in with an idea, like the one you were just quoting, the Discovering Windows, which I think was about, I'd seen a movie, I think I think it was based on seeing a movie, Julie and Julia. I knew I wanted to write about that because I liked that, but I had no idea where I was going to go with it. And I always say to myself, don't presume you know how this thing's going to end. Let yourself discover it. Let yourself, and you have to do the same thing with novels, of course. Let me learn why I'm wanting to write this story.
That's true. Even when your editor asks you for a synopsis, as mine did, when I sold Beach Plum Island, I sold it on the basis of a synopsis, not even on the basis of any sample chapters, which, like, really doesn't happen except in movies. As far as in my life, it certainly had never happened before. I was so shocked. I had to, you know, literally almost lie down in the airport when she called me because I was just completely flabbergasted that they would do that. But the point is, I had this synopsis that seemed very complete and I basically followed it as I wrote the novel. But even within that synopsis, within that structure, I kept discovering new things about the characters and about what they would say or do and where they would lead me that I hadn't really known would be in there. Even though I thought I'd written a really detailed synopsis, you know, it was still a surprise, which is wonderful.
You know, surprises are necessary. Speaking of surprises, I think there's a mutual friend of ours on the line.
Oh, good.
A question to ask. That's you, Jeffrey.
It is I, William. It is I, Bill. Hi, Holly.
Hi, how are you, Jeff? It's so nice to hear your voice.
Delightful interview. The dynamism and the dynamic is just stunning. I'm furiously taking notes here every time I get to hear another writer talk about the craft. I wanted to put in a couple of quick plugs for Holly's three books. They are the latest on the Wishing Hill, Sleeping Tigers, and The Durable Farmer's Daughter, a memoir.
Yeah.
Which I continue to pick up and read along with your wonderful book as well, Bill. Just great reads. Holly, a quick question, if I may.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you about finding that quiet place to write amongst all the activity around us, the clamor of our daily lives, all the places I know both you and Bill are always running to and back from, of writing retreats, because you have one that you do, if you're lucky enough to find one of those as well.
Yes,
good question.
Do you go on writing retreats, Bill? Do you ever take yourself off out of your life to do that?
Mm-hmm. Never. I don't. But I have a
never?
Never. But I do have time set aside, a lot of time set aside to work here in my home. Where I am right now is a studio, a detached garage, and that's where the work happens. And so that's my retreat. But no, I've never done a retreat. Maybe someday I will.
Oh,
have
gosh.
Have you done one?
Yes. Well, I think maybe as a working mom, you know, maybe I have to do them. You know, it's kind of necessary. And I'm lucky enough to have several friends who have, you know, summer homes or cottages, and they will loan them to me. I also have gone to writing retreats in spaces that are specifically for writers, you know, writers' residencies, that kind of thing. I even will just go do a mini retreat at the Boston Public Library. I live in Massachusetts, so I'll just go to the Boston Public Library. I don't know anybody in Boston. You can't use your cell phone in there. You can get online, but you have to input a code, so I don't do it. And I just go in one of their tutorial rooms, and I spend a whole day, and I'll have a day-long writing retreat. I've gone to hotels. You know, I will do a lot. Yeah, I can get a lot done in a four-day writing retreat, just a long weekend. I really recommend them, especially for moms, because you're even though you have a space in your house, as I do, if you have children, they know where you are. Even if you put, as one of my friends did, a growling tiger on the door of her office, so that when it was closed, the kids would shoot that. This is how I feel if you interrupt me, so don't interrupt me unless there's blood. You know, that would be like, you know, I've tried tactics like that. They don't always work. So you really have to just be away.
I agree.
So yeah, I totally recommend it.
I actually homeschool our youngest, my wife and I do, so we've got quite a full load of kids. But I do think that I hear this from a lot of the women writers I work with, and I think there's something about moms, some ancient psychic need to take care of and always be on alert, that sometimes the writers who are also mothers need to sever that so they can actually focus on what they're doing. That I think it's perhaps harder.
That's right.
Because I can really
and you
shut
have
off.
To be...
when I shut off, I shut off, and that's it.
That's great. That's great. And most of my male writer friends are able to do that. And, you know, they mostly have... Yeah, that's how men are. You compartmentalize. But I think it is true. Women, we get in our own way because we think the babysitter or the husband can't handle whatever crisis or emergency is happening. And so we run in, you know, to save the day. And it's very – so I always try to make sure to go at least, you know, an hour, preferably two, away from my house so that it's much harder for me to, you know, be in contact or do anything about any situation. So it's that sounds heartless, doesn't it? But I only do it like – I figure it's like paying taxes. Like four times a year I'll go and I'll just do that, you know, just quarterly. Make sure that I have time to think, because especially when you're working on a novel, to keep the whole story in your head for any significant amount of time, it makes a huge difference to be able to have a few days where you're just, the teacup is in the same place where you left it, you don't have to think about anybody but you, and there's nothing to shatter your concentration. It's really amazing.
No, it's really true. And people, I mean, it's not just kids, but it's very easy to treat the writer's work as not a job because you're not in an office or at the restaurant or wherever. But it really does need to be a time set aside and away from, because
yeah,
I
like
need
job.
To That absolutely, and I need to descend into that place to really kind of marinate in it to be able to write what I want to write. And if people are coming in and out, and I used to write in the afternoon when my kids were about the same time my kids would come home from school, and the first thing they want to do is come in and knock on the door, hey, Dad, and it just I wanted to see them, but I also wanted to, so I had to change to write in the morning so that they couldn't do that.
Right. You have to change to when you're, and my biggest thing was I met the short story writer Grace Paley. I was lucky enough to meet her when she was still alive, and phenomenal woman. And I asked her after she'd done her reading at the Boston Public Library what, you know, how did she write with small children at home, because I had just had my second child and I was just so overwhelmed. She just looked at me and she said, well, daycare. Because after World War II, they had set up all these daycares for women to go work in the factories during World War II. And she just used them and would go and write. And I thought, oh, my God, I could actually pay someone to take care of my children while I write. And if you can do that, I mean, it's hard to come up with the money, but if you can do that, you will get more writing done. That's just the magic equation right there for women, you know.
And regardless of how you do it, whether you put a lock on your door with a growling tiger or you do the daycare, you have to understand that you deserve that time, that there's nothing selfish about it, that you would want this. If you had a daughter or son, you would want them to be able to immerse themselves in what they love. This is your ambition for your children, and why you would deny that to yourself, it makes no sense to me. No, you absolutely have to do it, and you'll be a better parent because if you really do it in a way, you'll be able to give to them instead of shuffling around resentful all day long thinking how these little rats are keeping you from the thing you want to do.
That's absolutely true. And then the flip side is true, too. Your work really deserves it because that novel will not write itself, and you can't write a short story in, you know, 10 minutes while you're waiting in the car to pick up your daughter from gymnastics. You can edit. You can do a little bit of it, but it's not going to write the whole story. You know, you need more time than that. So you need to give yourself the time. You need that 10,000 hours or whatever Malcolm Gladwell always said, you know, to be a genius at anything really takes 10,000 hours, doesn't it?
And you need the time to sit and stare. What was it, Flannery O'Connor? Unique
stupidity. Yes, Flannery O'Connor. I love that. Yeah, in your book. Yeah.
But you do need it. You need to be able to just sit there and not feel rushed. Oh, my God, I've got a half an hour. I've got to get all that. You know, be able to sit there and let the thing come if it needs 20 minutes of just doing nothing.
That's right.
And so I'm all for it. Take your time. I'll tell you, my mom is just writing her first. She's writing three books now in her 70s. After spending, a lot of my childhood wanting to write, and I would have loved nothing more for her to write. It was nice having her around, but I would have been thrilled to know that she was in her room writing. So now, of course, that's
I don't know. You say that.
No, I would.
Most children don't want that at all. Most kids want their moms right there on task.
No, I would have wanted her. I wanted her to do it. I really did. I was thrilled to see her. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, yeah, I would have loved for her to do it. So, she's doing it finally. Well, listen, before we're getting close to go time here, but before we do, I want you to finish the sentence for me, okay? I'm going to give you one last question here. If writing has taught me anything, it has taught me what?
It has taught me to believe in myself even when all signs point otherwise. It has definitely taught me to believe in myself.
Oh, and that is a great lesson indeed. Well, Holly, thank you so much. This has been great.
Thank you, Bill. It was really a treat to talk with you, and I love your show. And I would say to all those writers out there, go buy Bill's book. It's really wonderful.
Well, thank you so much, Holly. And bye, Wishing Hill, while you're there.
Okay.
Well, there she goes. Well, listen, everybody, believe in yourself. It's true. It's such a cliche that when maybe we say it, you don't even hear it. But you, in many ways, the publishing world is buying your belief in yourself. They're not buying your book. They're really buying your belief in yourself, which comes in the form of a book or a poem and a short story. So believe in yourself. It's true. Well, thank you all for joining me. I will be here, as always, next Tuesday, same time, 2:30, with the Australian suspense writer Chris Allen, who got bumped a couple weeks ago when my internet went down. But we'll be back again for more fun. Until then, do what you love. Believe in what you love. Just be yourself. Whatever that is.